Basically, this is 100% dairy farm here in Quinn, just outside the village of Quinn here in County Clare. And we are making, this year we're making 130 cows, all spring calving. And it's the first few days of April now, and we just have about 15 cows left to calve. So it's been a very, very busy time of the year for us. But the spring has, the weather has been, it's been fine this spring. Weather is one of the huge challenges which we're dealing with, and we seem to be dealing with more extremes even in the last few years. I suppose just briefly, just a bit of background on the farm here itself. I started milking cows here in 1999, and prior to that this was just a dry stock farm, relatively lowly stocked, and I started out milking 16 cows the first year and have built it up gradually over what's nearly 20 years at this stage. And I suppose there's been a lot of lessons learned along the way. The farm type, the soil type here and in the surrounding area of Quinn would be primarily limestone. And this particular farm would be very, very dry. Even for this area, which would be considered limestone, this particular farm would be very dry. And that brings its own challenges. The nature of the soil is that it's very light. We wouldn't have much depth of soil in a lot of the farm. The positives of that are that we can, as soon as cows calve in the springtime, unless there's actual snow on the ground, we can get cows out to grass. And during the autumn, right into late autumn and early winter, even right into the end of November, we can have cows out on grass at least by day, which is a huge benefit, because grass is really the core of the business here. So it's the most important part of the business is grass. We spend an awful lot of time and energy focused on the grass side of businesses.
Would you soil test?
Yeah, soil tests. Soil testing would be very important to the business here. A minimum, I would say nearly all dairy farmers are soil testing every second year, which would be a minimum requirement. The reason being, because with that number, we would be stocked relatively highly, you know, with that number of cows here in the farm. So every time the milk is collected and leaves the farm, it's taking particularly potassium and phosphorus with it. So we have to know where our deficiencies are, and we have to be able to target those areas with the relevant fertilizers, obviously to maximize the amount of grass we grow, which keeps us, which our costs under control. The more grass we grow, that's really what makes us competitive. And right across Ireland, and that's why Irish dairy is so competitive right across the world. It's simple, it's a very simple business model, and it's grass. And we have, without doubt, the best dairy grass farmers in the world are in Ireland, and you know, some of them are in one. I know them in that they're a lot closer than we think. You don't have to go down into the dairy heartlands of South Tipperary or North Cork. They're in parts of West Clare. They're in this parish, and it's just growing huge amounts of quality feed. And as I said, that's the positives of this farm, with the nature of the soil, the limestone. The negatives are that we can become very moisture deficient very, very quickly. Hard to believe within this county, where you can travel literally 10 miles the other side of Ennis and it's the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. But here, summer of 2018 was a great example of moisture deficit. We were feeding silage for 6 weeks during the summer and we had huge costs. And I suppose the worry is that what we're facing in the future? Are we looking at extremes of weather? Last year we had everything. Is last year the future, I suppose, is what dairy farmers are worried about, because we had a very wet and cold winter right through into late spring, right up until the middle of late April, which brought its own problems. And then within 6 weeks, we had gone straight into a drought period. That would be a worry going forward, that we're dealing with extremes. And I suppose we have to plan our business model with that in mind. That would mean specifically that we where you would normally just have silage for what was considered a 3 month winter. Now we probably have to have silage every day of the year because we might have, as I said last summer, we had to feed it for second half of June and all of July.
And are you noticing changes then every year with the severe weather?
Well, I suppose, I mean, one thing about farmers is we're very quick to forget about weather, because if we didn't, we wouldn't face the following year. But I suppose, in the last relatively short space of time, like, we've had very challenging years. Like 2009, I suppose, was my first experience of really challenging. That was a really bad summer. And then we had 2012. Wasn't particularly bad here. We can take a lot of moisture, but it was very wet. And 13 was a very, very challenging spring. And last year was everybody was affected. So that's what I can think off the top of my head. That's what in the last 5 years those instances occurred. So and I think even talking to older farmers, I think there is an acceptance that definitely there is a change in the weather patterns.
Yeah.
What we seem to be getting, if you even take the last 2 weeks, people might be aware of this, but even in the last 2 weeks, in the first 2 weeks of March in 2019, we had 2 months rainfall in the first 2 weeks. And that seems to be the pattern. Like the soft day, as what was known in every rural setting, seems to be a thing of the past. What we're looking at is we're getting downpours followed by periods of dry, and that just seems to be weather is the number one in terms of farming. If you ask dairy farmers, if you give them the option of a strong milk price or good weather, I would say 8 out of 10 would take weather.
Mm.
Because it just impacts every morning we get up. It has a huge impact. And as I said, on our systems here in Ireland, it's when we need to get the cows out to grass. But then on the plus side of that, things have improved greatly, like our skills in dealing with and our grassland management over the last, since I started, and particularly in the last, I would say in the last 5 years. There were always guys that were very good at it, but I think in the last 5 years, I think it has become wider, because we have to be. We simply have to be.
Yes.
I mean, if we're not growing grass, we're not using it. We're not making money, and it's as simple as that. In terms of practical, I suppose it's out in the fields. We'll say we have practices that we will say farm roadways. We have better quality and more extensive. We have different methods. One that we use is methods called on-off grazing, whereas literally if we can get cows on grazing for 3 hours a day, we're happy. We can take them off then. That they're huge things, whereas before cows were either they were in or they were out.
Yeah.
And I suppose that has changed now with my generation, and you know, dairy farmers are very innovative, and they're, you know, and practices like that, they're huge things, and we're able to grow an awful lot more grass. You know, we're measuring grass. We know when we have too much grass, we know when we're deficient in grass on the farm. You know, these are things, it's not just farming, but you know, it's so true. But like, if you're not measuring what you're at, you know, it's 90% to ground around grassland management. And like, there are great supports there, like Chagas does great work on the ground in terms of supporting dairy farmers, in terms of their passing on the information. There are methods of spreading the information. At the very top of that, the co-ops all run what are known as monitor groups, where they select a small group of farmers and put best practice in place, and that information is spread out to the rest. And then the next level below that is where every dairy farmer has access to a local discussion group where you meet once a month on farms, and it's all about the transfer of information. Because we work independently and we can become very isolated, and particularly if there's a previous generation farmer on the farm, and it's very hard to break the habits of a lifetime. There are some, you see that, I suppose that was the one thing for me personally, I didn't have that. That was one of the bonuses of starting fresh. I didn't have a generation looking over my shoulder saying, that's not the way I did it. No, I made plenty of mistakes as well. But I suppose it's just to kind of, for the younger dairy farmers to be able to say to the previous generation, look, this is what the good guys are doing, this is what we need to be doing, and there are avenues available to dairy farmers to do that, because as I said, sure, all dairy farmers are effectively running independently now. They might have labour on the farm as stock numbers have increased, but management decisions in 95% of dairy farmers come back to one person.
Right.
So that's challenging. That wouldn't be the norm in the other business world, you know. But there are helps there for us.
Yes. So that'd be the main challenges. And then with the abolition of the quota, how did that impact?
It had different impacts in different parts of the country. We're here, obviously, in the western half of the country, and I suppose we weren't impacted as hugely as parts of other parts, for the reason being that we supply Kerry Agribusiness, is our co-op where we sell the milk to, and quotas went in 2015. But in this what area we'll call it, the Kerry Milk Pool, is the which is a lot of West Clare and some parts of East Clare and a lot of North Kerry. There was milk became available to us in the previous 10 years. So there was quite a bit of expansion here in the previous 10 years. We would have bought quota. There was a milk quota trading scheme from, I think it was the mid 2000s. And we were able to buy it at a quite affordable price. It had to stay within your co-op, so we were able to access Kerry Milk quite reasonably, whereas in the big Dairy Gold in Lambia further south, they couldn't buy it, it was so expensive. So we had expanded
already,
kind of pretty much a lot of Kerry suppliers would have if they wanted to, would have really expanded. Now there has been an expansion since, and it has brought challenges. We all seem to be milking more cows and seem to be working harder, and the return doesn't seem to be a whole lot better.
And how about the CAP reform then? How is that impacting?
Sure, CAP reform is being negotiated at the moment, the next round of it. I suppose from what we can see and from what we are the soundings, we obviously, Phil Hogan is the EU Commissioner for Agriculture, and I suppose a lot of farmers would like the soundings that he's making, you know. He seems to be suggesting that the middle of the road farmer is going to be kind of left where they are, and that historically, beef barons and large scale beef operators who have up until now had very, very substantial single farm payments, that looks like it's going to change, and rightly so. I mean, these figures are based on their ancient history at this stage. They're based on figures of 2000, 2001 and 2, which is of no relevance in this day and age. There's also going to be, it started in the last CAP reform where there's more emphasis on the environment and the greening element to it, and that's going to become more of an issue, I would imagine. And personally, I don't see a problem with that. You know, I mean, if we as farmers are going to take money out of the EU budget, out of the taxpayers of the European Union, we have to be able to stand up and say, well, this is what it's for and this is what we're doing. And we have to be able to, you know, we have to be able to say, well, the water quality is improving. You know, we're producing quality traceable food. That's the least, you know, I mean, that's what the taxpayer, they're handing over these billions of euros across Europe. That's what they're entitled to. And I think that we should be happy enough to do that. Just on a practical ground, on what's going to happen on the ground here. If you take this farm, for example, I know for a fact that there are a couple of farm roadways, one in particular, which runs adjacent to a waterway. It's not a river, but it's the next step down. It's a long drain, and it pretty much has water in it all the year. It's not except in a particularly dry summer. And roadways like that, where cows are walking, I think that will have to change. That won't be allowed. And it's not, you know, and you say that's not ideal, that roadway is there. But like, in the greater scheme of things, you know, you don't have to think too deep or far to see how. Well, sure, look, it's going to affect the impact on the water quality. Right. And sure, it's hugely important. Like, and there has been, I don't know fully, but I would believe since grant funding came in for slurry containment measures going back however long now, that the water quality has improved in our rivers. I know practices that are on this farm that went on when I started farming in just wouldn't dream of doing the now, you know, and we have to account for all our slurry and our, we have to have capacity, and it's only proper order. As I said, we've invested, all farmers or most have invested substantially on their farms, and it's as I said, it's if we want to take the euros in one hand, I suppose the only thing I suppose the only concern I would have as a dairy farmer is that while the message from the other side is being lost, like, because you often hear it in the media that, oh, sure, farmers get grants for everything, and sure, they're getting subsidies there. Whereas I don't hear it enough that the message actually out there is that a lot of these subsidies for farmers, they're actually subsidizing the EU consumer because they're getting cheap quality food because of these subsidies which are being paid out to farmers. And there's a huge difference between cheap food and cheap quality food. And I mean, the world, you can get cheap food very easily, go to Brazil, for beef, go to Thailand for your chicken. That's no problem, have your cheap food. But if you want to put the word quality behind it, it's a different story.
Yeah.
And that message isn't being conveyed to the EU.
Yeah, so that'd be important.
And I think it's important, you know, because, you know, we're all consumers, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
We all have families and we all want, but I would have huge concerns about a lot, and and even in the States, like, they just have different attitudes to the quality of food, you know. A lot of them take the beef, sure, for example, in the States, they're using hormones which are legal. If you were found using them here, you'd be in jail.
Exactly, and the health impacts then on that.
Health impacts,
so
you know.
That's a huge point, really, getting that information out there.
As I said, it's, I don't think we hear it enough.
No.
Or, as I said, farmers get grants for just, you know, buy new tractors, you know. And that's not the reality.
No. And what's your view then on the agri-environmental schemes?
Yeah, I'm in GLAS, which is the current environmental scheme. I suppose I would be unique, but wouldn't be the norm for a dairy farmer with my stocking rate to be in. There wouldn't be too many farmers in. But I suppose what has allowed me to go into it is that this particular farm, it bounces the local river here, the River Rhine, which is a large, it's a waterway, it's a tributary of the Fergus, you know. And basically I was able to implement a measure which involved fencing off that river and all adjacent drains and stuff, which allowed me into it, which is fine. And I would say there has been a cost involved. Cows can't go and drink at the river anymore, and they don't. But I can see the benefits of it, like, you know. And that River Rhine is now, to the best of my knowledge, the only reason I was allowed into it, because it's now the water quality is considered pristine, which allowed me to go into the last scheme under that particular side of it. So and as I said, we're not allowed at drinking points anymore along the river. And we've had to put in water troughs and wiping and cost and all that. But like that, I can see the benefits of it,
yes.
You know. I don't know what's coming down the line in terms of environmental schemes after that.
And any challenges then with regard to schemes?
Sure. every scheme brings its own set of rules and conditions. That particular GLAS scheme it was different in the previous ones. The previous schemes were called REPS, Rural Environmental Protection Schemes, and they ran for a series, I think it was, might have been three or four of them. They had they were slightly different in that they were kind of a catch-all farm and catch-all for everybody, whereas the GLAS is more of individually, and there are different conditions and options available to farmers, and it's worked relatively well. As I said, I suppose I was lucky in the sense that I had all this riverbank effectively. If I didn't have that, don't know if I'd be in it really. One of the elements to it is you can set aside a certain amount of pasture, which is called low input pasture, effectively where you farm without any slurries or sprays, or I couldn't apply that to my farming, because once you have low input pasture, you wouldn't be able to apply for a derogation, which is where we have to apply to produce more organic nitrogen, which is allowed on the standard farm, which is 170. We produce more than that here. We have to apply to the department for a derogation, and you can't do that with a low input pasture on the environmental scheme. So it's not really geared towards the dairying side of things. And as I say, going forward, probably don't see too many dairy farmers in the schemes, if whatever form they'll be. I can't see them being hugely that relevant to a lot of dairy farmers.
So with dairy farming, there's probably a lot more emissions now when the quotas are gone. So what do dairy farmers need to help them be more sustainable?
Obviously emissions are a huge issue now, and they're being discussed right across the media. What they have to be relevant to a particular farm and ground level and what happens on the ground. I mean, emissions don't mean much, because unless they affect you directly, it's like anything. I know the Chagas have been promoting, and they're advocating different slurry application methods, whereas and a lot of it up to now was basically you go out into a field and you just spread slurry, and it can go 20 feet up in the air and huge emissions, and that's coming to an end. And there are different practices, just technical. There's things called injecting slurry and dribble bars, and basically what you're doing is you're just decreasing the emissions from the slurry at spreading time. The negative side of it for us is that there's a bigger cost, because the contractors are, if the farmers doing themselves, the machinery costs more. And we have to bear that cost. The plus side, outside of the lower emissions, the plus side is that we're utilizing the slurry, which probably up until semi-recently would have been seen as a nuisance on a lot of dairy farm, or on a lot of farms, not just dairy farms, seen as a nuisance in the sense that it was kind of just get it out and get it out of the way. Whereas now we look on slurry as a valuable resource. So the more, if we can get a higher return out of it by using these methods, that's the positive side of it. And that's going to be, I would say, within very, very quickly, it'll be compulsory to have these low emission methods. And that's there again, on the face of it, farmers will maybe slightly resistant, like, you know, our nature, I suppose that's kind of nature of the beast. But when you see the benefits of it, farmers are in general fairly shrewd. When they can see the benefits of things, they won't be long coming around to, and I think that's going to be the easy part of it. I think the bigger emissions won't be as easily solved. Obviously there's more dairy cows. I think dairy cow number have increased 40% since quotas went. That's a huge number when you think about it in such a short space of time. And but there are in terms of how we can address those issues in relation to the cow numbers, the biggest one there is in relation to the type of cow we're breeding. There's huge science at work behind the breeding policy of the national herd. There's what's known as the EBI, which is basically, it's a rating given to each individual cow, and it's called the Economic Breeding Index. And if you take the base as zero, every cow has either a plus or minus of that. And I think the science there is proving that the higher the EBI of the cow, the more efficient this cow is to produce fat and protein and milk, and obviously the more efficient cow produces less emissions. So I think that could have a big role to play as well. And we're very lucky in Ireland that we're world leaders in terms of the science, and a lot of it is the science that it's based on genomics, And we're very lucky that we have the Moore Park, which is a research facility in Cork, which is just, they're the world leaders in terms of what's going on down there. And it transfers very, very quickly to farm gate. I mean, all dairy farmers know the EBI of their herd. We all know the EBI of our individual cows. We're looking to increase it the whole time. And I suppose these particular cow type that are appearing on dairy farms, they're kind of cows that are efficient in the sense that they're staying in herds longer, they're milking more days of the year, and they're just more efficient. They're just more efficient at producing. Mm. And as I said, it's science is driving that. And I don't know how far it'll take us, but it's definitely helping, you know. That's going to be a big element of it as well. Dairy farming getting a bit of bad press there, particularly in whatever seems to be the last 6-12 months. But we're not great at selling our message, you know. I mean, there's an awful lot of great stuff going on, and we're feeding a lot of people, and we're feeding them really quality food, and we're, as I said, producing out grass. It's something that farmers really believe in, and dairy farmers on the ground, they're passionate about it, like, you know. And as I said, we don't sell our message that well, and our farm lobby groups probably don't sell it that well for us either at times. But on an individual basis, dairy farmers would be quite positive with our future, you know.
You mentioned there about the resistance taking up some aggregate schemes. What do you think helps farmers to be less resistant?
Farmers will look straight away, they'll see the bottom line, you know, and see the economics of it. And if they're being told then that there's X, Y, and Z that have to be done, they can meet resistance. I suppose it's the carrot and the stick, like the carrot is the bottom line and the check that comes into the year, you know. And I suppose that would be that's really primarily what focuses farmers' minds. And but then what becomes behind that scheme, and those schemes are there to help the environment, obviously. Farmers will look at that afterwards. But as I said, like the current class scheme, the targeted approach to it works well. The reality is, if there wasn't payment there for the class scheme, there'd be nobody in it. And that's the reality.
That's it.
40% more dairy cows in the country in 4 years. Of course, those cows are emitting, and sure, we know the science is there behind it. But I suppose if you were to look at it globally, I would personally anyway feel that we said on our grass-based system that we can be friends of the environment, you know. I mean, there are farming practices going on in other parts of the world which are hugely more contributing to these emissions than we are. And I suppose particularly in Ireland, because agriculture makes up such a huge part of the economy, we therefore contribute what looks like a huge part of the emissions of the country, which is true. But that's only simply because there's no industrial base in this country, you know. And for historic reasons, you know, we don't have an industrial base. We have an agricultural base, and that base has got a lot stronger there and obviously expanded. So yeah, if you were to look at the frontline figures, whatever we're contributing, yeah, of course we're contributing. But just referring back to those methods, like in terms of the science behind the cows and in terms of the slurry spreading and all those things, like we are up there, you know, I mean, we need to sell our message. As I said, there's farming practices there across any part of the world, like go to the States there where they're producing milk on indoor, you know, and even other parts of Europe, you know, you don't have to go to the States, particularly the big dairy of Denmark and the Netherlands, which produce huge volumes of dairy, and but it's their emission, you know, they're producing it way more efficiently than we are. I mean, if you can prove in the Netherlands that you can get your cows out to grass for 60 days a year, you get a bonus in your milk price, you know. It's a different system, and while our volume, our top line figure and our emissions obviously has increased, the way we're doing it is still, we are, and I think that, and beef as well, we do produce it. I think from what I know, could be wrong now, but I think we are the most efficient producers of dairy in the world, and I think we're fourth or fifth of beef. The big thing that has happened in Holland and has happened in the last 2 years is there's been effectively a cull of the national herd, and the way they've gone about it is that they have restricted the organic nitrogen level, which is actually not related to the organic side of things, but where dairy farmers previously were allowed to apply for this derogation, which I referred to earlier, that they could go from the standard 170 up to 250. In Holland, they have brought that back to 210. And as a result, there has been huge cull, effectively, of the national herd. And that's never an easy thing, and particularly post-quota. And I would say it's been looked at in darkened rooms here in places, and it's probably something that's probably coming down the line. Look, it'll be resisted very, very strongly in this country, and like nobody wants to mention it, but I'm sure I would imagine it's a battle that's currently being fought in Europe, but it's been fought on the sidelines and away from the media spotlight, and we're going to see where it ends up. But I think it'll effectively be quoted by another name. Yeah, sure. It's just where the knife will fall for finish. Yes. You know. But it's I would say it's coming in some form or other. Quotas by another name in terms of the emissions, and that's going to have implications for the output of the. Because it's not just while all dairy farmers have invested on their farms. At farm level, like there's been huge investment in right across the industry. But the co-ops have invested massively, and milk processing. This thing goes far. Maybe not obvious to the what's becoming a more urbanized country, with everything seems to be shifting towards the East Coast. But like you know, just drive into the town of Mallow, Listowel, Charleville, Mitchellstown, Waterford.
Yeah.
There's multi-million euro investment. Huge companies right across the dairy, in stainless steel, right across the dairy industry. So they all have skin in the game as well, at the farm level, you know.
And I suppose just getting back to then, last couple of questions on the severe weather.
Yeah.
You don't have flooding on the land here, have you?
We do. As I said, the River Rhine is kind of a natural boundary to the farm, and the bottom, as we refer to it, the bottom part of the farm, is effectively a floodplain.
Okay.
For the River Rhine. And if you were here 2 weeks ago, you would have seen a mighty flood down.
Really?
There that was maybe bones of 20 acres. To my mind, it has always been a floodplain of the river. It's not ever prepared for area of the farm, which has been hugely developed, you know.
And are there any measures that are put in place there, like buffers or anything like that, that would help it?
No, because like as I said, every river needs a floodplain. This is my view on it.
Right.
Every river needs a flood. Like we've seen in a lot of towns, and our nearest town here is Ennis, a great example of it. Like when the economy was booming and there was pressure for housing, like sure there was houses built all over floodplain and with disastrous consequences. As I said, so it's a part of the farm. You kind of have to accept it. It's summer, generally there for summer grazing. You could occasionally get a flood there in the summer as well if you've got a lot of rain, you know. But in terms of that, there has been some remedial measures further upriver there in terms of cleaning the river, and that's fine and that helps. But in terms of the big volume, look, it's a floodplain. It's going to flood. It disappears, you know. You can't. It's a severe weather, as I referred to earlier, definitely. They would seem to be coming more regular, you know.
And would the farm insurance cover damage from severe weather events like storms or?
Yeah, well, we had an example of it actually only here in the last few months. We had a fairly, it wasn't, we had storm damage done. And yeah, the insurance covered it. That was the end of January. So hopefully I won't be paying for the next 10 years in premiums, but that could be an element of it too. I'm probably dreading opening the renewal notice there in October, November, and seeing what I'm going to have to pay for that. Okay, it was covered, but I'm sure I'll be paying back for it effectively over the next 10 years in terms of increased renewal. But yeah, there is storm damage would be available to farmers. I see flooding on the policy. I don't know. I don't really know how relevant it is to farm. It's not relevant to farm as such unless it's I'd say that's pretty much a similar note to a house domestic policy. If you flood once, you get it, but they probably wouldn't renew it again. But yes, in terms of farmland, flooding isn't relevant. Like, there's no, you know, there's obviously an economic loss, but nothing that the insurance companies would be interested in. Or,
so that's anything else you'd like to add to me?
Just that farmers, we're the ones at the coalface, you know. And while we might be seen to be the enemy of, you know, in terms of the environment, we're actually not. Particularly, you know, as I said, just, I suppose, the simple message from our business is the fact that we grow more, we need to grow the maximum amount of grass, and for the grass to grow, the soil has to be in optimum condition, and we have to mind it, and we have to cultivate it, and we can't damage it, and we can't be reckless with it. And so, you know, it's in our interests basically to work with it. It's, you know, we have to work with our environment, and I suppose we'd like that message to be conveyed maybe better in the media. I suppose social media has changed everything as well, because messages can go far and wide very quickly, but messages that are ill-informed, you know, clickbait is easy to, it's very hard to battle against that. So I suppose, like, farmers, we really are protectors of the environment, really, I suppose, is